From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project is underway, an opportunity for you to pick up some insight, if we're lucky, into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Sir.
You sound like you're introducing the Howdy Doody Show.
And here he is. I'll do my best Howard Cosell if I can. Right next to Alan in the studio is Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus, meaning he had merit, of the Daily Freeman in Kingston.
I've lost all my merit, but doing the Howdy Doody theme, I hope you don't think I'm Clarabel.
It takes some people's age. There's someone in the studio too young to know what you're talking about.
Right.
That's Kaylin Brown, professor of journalism at the College of St. Rose.
How are you? Clarabelle.
I'm well. I don't know about Howdy Doody. I know it was a thing.
Wasn't there Prince Summer, Winter,
yes,
Spring,
Princess,
Fall? Princess. That's right, Princess.
I don't know about all this stuff.
So you see what you get from listening to this show,
folks? Yes, you don't hear this elsewhere.
Here we are. The President of the United States has threatened to withdraw the media credentials of those who cover the White House, who write stories he doesn't like. Just thought we should put that on the record. If you're keeping track of actions by an elected president that are more befitting a tyrant, put that on your list.
I like it. That's very gutsy of you, Rex. I like it. I think you're right. And of course, we have mentioned a number of times that Nixon, on the famous Nixon tapes, is saying the Washington Post, which had exposed the whole Watergate thing, was never to be allowed in the White House under any circumstances whatsoever. Never, he said. I never want to see those people here.
And his aides disregarded that, right? I mean, they knew that they couldn't.
Well, Nixon didn't even want the Washington Post style section to have a credential for the wedding of his daughter in the White House. So,
isn't he married?
I don't know which daughter it was.
One to Eisenhower.
Right.
And one to our wonderful Ed Cox, the chair of our Republican State Committee here.
But don't you think this speaks to the fact that both of those presidents are clueless about what it means to be a journalist? Because a journalist is going to go after the story whether or not they have permission to be in the White House?
Absolutely. You know, during the Trump campaign, he barred certain journalists from certain things, and they went ahead and did the reporting anyway.
Right. He would not allow, but there was a handful of papers or organizations he wouldn't allow in his rallies.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to go work around it.
You know, the problem is that there's a certain level of what some are calling scandal fatigue, because we just see scandal inflation. That's a piece that's come along from the Morning Media Wire, which is put out by Politico. And it makes you feel as though there is just more going on, that we don't have time to even pay attention to stuff that would ordinarily have been lead stories in any other era.
So that's a very good point. You know, I think to understand what he's doing here, you have to understand the base. He has convinced the base, his voters, that the New York Times and others are evil, and the Washington Post, and that the way you get it even with them is you talk about them all the time, and you'd say they're scandalous, and you say things like the failing New York Times, even though that's not true, and you just play to the base. He doesn't care about the whole country. Because he knows the whole country ain't electing him another time. It's these very specific states with a very specific group of voters, and he has to keep them happy, and that's what he's doing.
Mm.
And he has demonstrated he cares about one thing,
himself.
Exactly right.
Well, I was going to say the same thing, because most people would initially think that his use of the phrase fake news suggests that the news is inaccurate and it's been being reported inaccurately. And more often than not, it's not that at all. It's just he doesn't like the kinds of stories that are being written because they don't make him look good.
No, but Ira, I think you may miss the point. accuracy and truth is not important to him at all.
Without a doubt.
And so therefore, you know, you can hold him accountable for 3,000 lies, which is what I think the Washington Post has him up to now. But in fact, he doesn't care about that as long as he says the New York Times is failing and the New York Times should be barred from the White House, if that's what he's saying. Then, you know, you got to understand that's where he is. That's what he does.
But in trying to sell the concept of fake news, his base, I believes that he means that the reporting is inaccurate. And the fact is it's mostly not inaccurate, but it's just stories that he doesn't like because it doesn't make him look good.
Well, see, Ira, there too, I think I disagree with you. I think what he really is saying is fake news means I don't like these newspapers, and I don't think you should either. It's not that they've accepted the argument that it's fake news. It's that they've accepted the fact that they hate the liberal press.
But they hate these newspapers. Why?
Because he tells them to.
Right.
And because they're very unhappy people, and they are susceptible to anything he says.
The hard thing is that when you point this out, when you try to say to people who are supporters of the president, you know, we are not biased. It is just our responsibility to report the lies, the inaccurate statements. It's our responsibility to be on top of the news. And the news is not making the president look good. The response is always, well, whatabouts? You know, the whatabouts. What about Hillary?
No,
the other day, another guy on talk radio the other day was saying, yeah, well, what about Ted Kennedy? Well, he's dead, for one thing, and he's not the president. So, you know, why are we not reporting about Ted Kennedy? We're instead reporting about Donald Trump is astonishing. Sorry.
And Rex, to your point, it isn't as if people in the United States didn't hear about Chappaquiddick.
Of course.
You know, enough
times.
It
was reported repeatedly. Exactly right. It's been reported. And another item to make note of is the frequency with which reputable news organizations make sure to correct the record if they get it wrong. There's an entire page in the New York Times with a particular section devoted to accuracy. So if there are mistakes in the news reporting is corrected. The president continues to perpetuate lies, and I agree with Rex. That's the responsibility
of journalism.
Of course,
you always agree with Rex, no matter what he says.
I don't know about that yet. So, well, we have devoted our lives to journalism.
There you go.
Right.
So we have to turn to a local issue.
Before we go, Rex.
Oh, before we go, Rex, yes.
I wonder if the New York Times guys and the bosses there, they have houses in the Mid-Hudson Valley, I know that. I wonder if they listen to this program. Because I was interested in the fact that on their editorial page, they have a little basic explanation of what their who their editorial board is, and that it is separate from the reporting, something you and I duke out a lot, Rex, and also from the op-ed page, that the editorial board is separate from that. That may lead us into another place, but if you want to go somewhere
else,
there
we go.
You're the boss of this program.
The program same
way. Well,
it actually does come to this local story that I was about to mention that Alan was saying as we were about to go in the air that the number one story on the WAMC website yesterday as we are speaking had to do with the Berkshire Eagle, the fine small newspaper in western Massachusetts that, by the way, carries an Alan Chartock column every week. This newspaper's managing editor.
Did you know that Dr. Brown smirked when you said that?
That's funny. I thought Rex was doing full disclosure for our listeners.
Oh,
so to be ethical, and I thought
I was just pulling the knife out of my ribs. Yeah.
Nonsense. The managing editor for news of that paper has resigned, and she has said that she's concerned about the ethics violations there. She's upset that the paper has had a guy on as an advisory board to the editorial page who ran for local school board, and she says that's unethical and she had to leave.
Actually, just a little bit of a correction. She said, and the paper is contesting this greatly, she said he was on the editorial board.
He said on the editorial.
The paper says, no, he was on the editorial advisory board. And other great souls like Yo-Yo Ma are also on the editorial advisory board. Which leads to the question, Rex and Caitlin and Ira, you are all in the business. Should somebody who is running for political office be on either the advisory board to the editorial department, to the Eagle, or on the editorial board itself? What would you guys do if somebody on your editorial board, and Ira, you were the editorial board, decided to run for political office? Wouldn't you ask them to step aside?
Well, let's start from this premise, speaking personally. I was only happy to see a politician in my building when either A, they were being interviewed, or B, when they were buying an advertisement. So I would like to keep arm's length with politicians, and it is tougher in a small community. And when a small community newspaper such as the Berkshire Eagle has an advisory board, which a lot of small newspapers don't have, it's very difficult to have members who have no tentacles into politics. That said, if I knew that somebody had a political background or was running for office, I wouldn't want him or her on the editorial board. So that would concern me, but I don't know that that's the case here. I mean, as I read this story, it seems to me that there is a separation between the newsroom and the editorial board, that this person did not play heavily, if at all, in editorial policy. And I just, with apologies to this managing editor, whom I don't know, and I'm only going by this story.
Well, it's great respect, by the way. I think she's terrific, and so does almost everybody else who deals with her.
Go ahead. It sounds like she overreacted. Now, that's the view from 40 miles away.
And that's their view.
Meaning the newspaper.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not feasible that somebody on our editorial board would run for office. It just wouldn't happen.
On the board itself.
On the editorial board itself. If we had a community advisory board, I don't think we would have any concern about that person running for office. After all, the editorial page is to express opinions. It's different from the news side of the newspaper. Even though there are some people, some personnel who overlap at the Berkshire Eagle, for example, the editor of the paper sits on the editorial board. Same thing in my newsroom. I sit on the editorial board and I oversee the news operation. That's not the case with the New York Times, as you're pointing out, Alan. The editor of the New York Times does not have anything to do at all with the editorial. So the smaller the paper, you tend to get the editor involved a little bit on the opinion page. But if we had an advisory board, which, you know, might be a good idea, I don't think it would be a terrible thing to have somebody who ran for a local school board.
Not ran.
Here we go. I agree again.
But it's running.
So no, it's over. The election's over.
It's over now when you say past tense.
Yes, lost.
Right. So if it's an advisory board, these people exist to give advice to the newspaper.
Right.
How many of us sitting around this table right now give advice, get advice, and what do we do with advice? Well, what's wrong with listening to advice, right?
Well, Dr. Brown, let us go back and take it to its natural extreme. Should an editorial advisory board be putting politicians on their board?
They're people, too.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but these advisory boards are relatively new phenomena. We're relatively new, I would say, inside of 20 years, if that long ago. And that the reason for their existence or their invention was because newspapers were being criticized as being too isolated.
Yes.
And let's open up our doors and get more points
of view. Well, sometimes you put people, let's say you're buying a newspaper. Let's just say you're buying a newspaper. I want to take this out of the Eagle for a minute. Let's just say there's a new thing and you take a couple of rich guys and you put them on your advisory board. Maybe that's to generate a certain amount of money.
This could be.
As opposed to what you just said, Ira.
But by definition, advisory board is to give advice to the editorial board. They don't have to follow that advice, but it provides them a point of view that they might not have had.
Sure. And in this particular case, the editor of the Berkshire Eagle, in the article about this that I read on your website, WAMC.org.
2,500 clicks in about 24 hours.
2,501.
There you go. you know, the editor of the Berkshire Eagle, Kevin Moran, pointed out that their editorial page skews left of center, and the individual in question is a conservative, is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, which is a conservative think tank, you know, and was an advisor to Mitt Romney's presidential campaign. Mitt Romney was a conservative when he ran for president.
And Alan, let me ask you, the Legislative Gazette.
Yes.
I remember years ago that you had an advisory board because you asked me to be on that advisory board.
Right.
Thank you for that. So why did you want people on your advisory board?
Well, you know, because I thought it was important that we, as Rex and you have stated, that we get all kinds of opinions. On the other hand, because we were accused at the time of being a Shark Talk liberal organization.
Aha.
You know, we don't want that.
Well, bring it even closer to home. WAMC, in addition to having a board of directors, has a community advisory
federally board. Mandated community
yeah,
advisory
so that's good,
board.
Isn't it? Yeah. It's good to have an advisory board. And you've even had politicians on your board of directors here. So there you go. How big a deal is that? It's not a big thing. It's good.
No, I think I have great respect for the managing editor who resigned because she felt strongly about it. I get where she was coming from. And, you know, I thought She broke rule number one, which was to quit without having a forwarding address.
Yes.
Without
dangerous.
Having another job.
Yeah.
And that takes a little bit of guts.
Yeah. Now, see, we're going to be perceived here. By the way, folks, you can have your point of view expressed if you write media at WAMC.org. And you may perceive us as being just defenders of establishment media.
I certainly do.
But the fact is, I'm not terribly troubled by this particular instance. But obviously some people are, or else you wouldn't have gotten all those clicks on the website, right? How about that? So
possible.
We will hear from listeners, perhaps. Did I say readers again before? Sorry.
You did. I didn't remember hearing that.
I don't know.
Can we talk about what I'm troubled about?
What are you troubled about, Kaylee?
I'm so troubled about the gun advertisement on the front page of the Sun Sentinel in Florida, which is the paper that most closely covered the Parkland shootings and massacre. On the same day this ad was running, there were a couple of stories on the front page of the Sun Sentinel about follow stories on the Parkland shootings. And the editors in the newspaper were unaware that that advertisement was appearing on the front page. So they apologized after the father of one of the victims, his child was murdered in her high school, after he contacted the newspaper and was beside himself.
I just
obviously
would want to correct one thing, and you're a professor of journalism, and you know this as well as I do. The editors said they were unaware of it.
Yes, correct, correct. Thank you for that attribution.
They should not have been unaware of it. If they're paginating their newspaper, they should see, and in fact should be looking to see, what advertisements are on a page.
Right, and in the aftermath of this, the publisher, Nancy Meyer, who used to work in the Times Union advertising department, by the way, has said that they are no longer going to accept gun ads for the front page, I believe, right?
Well, right, and that's okay. Having them on the front page in that community seemed to be particularly abrasive.
But that's a good distinction, Rex, because she just initially they said only we're no longer going to accept gun advertisements. Then shortly after, they said there was a temporary moratorium. So what's it going to be?
So what is
the obligation of journalism in the newspaper? Should they be accepting money for gun advertisements? I mean, that's a bigger question.
That's not a question that we get to answer, though, as editors, right? That's a question that Ira gets to deal with as a publisher. And I would say
it's fine because guns are legal. If you want to make a philosophical decision against it, it's your purview. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't think I would have accepted them on the front page.
We used to have a great guy on this panel. He's no longer here, Monty Trammer.
Mm-hmm. Monty Trammer was the publisher of the Saratogian.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when we have these types of discussions, he would pretty much mirror what Ira just said. Take the money.
Yeah, and I knew that was coming, too.
Now. And, you know, historically, and the best example, although it's no longer relevant because airlines don't advertise in newspapers anymore, but when an airliner would put an ad in a paper, there would be a caveat that said, pull my ad if there is a plane crash that's going to be reported today in your newspaper. And conversely, though, and relative to what I said before, if there was going to be a story that might make the airline industry look bad, the editorial department would not put it on the same page as the airline ad.
But you made a point a few seconds ago. You said particularly in these times, something mm-hmm. like that. You know, newspapers are going broke.
Yeah. Well, I don't know they're going broke, but their revenue's down.
Well,
depends on the newspaper.
Profits are down.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're still profits.
There's a distinction there.
My old company is not broke.
They're buying more newspapers, so they seem to be doing okay.
And Rex, of course, has always said, you know, that years from now, that it's doubtful that we'll see newspapers in print anymore because, you know, things are bad. So the point I'm trying to make, don't you see, is that once you have that kind of crunch, decisions are made in a different context than if you weren't having the fiscal crunch.
No doubt about it. It was a lot easier to turn down an ad 30 years ago than it is today.
So to the question Alan raised about people quitting their job when they don't have one, two more senior editors have left what is sadly imploding newspaper in Denver, the Denver Post, Pulitzer Prize winning, terrific newspaper in its day. And Ira may have a particular perspective on this because this is a paper owned by his former employer, that is the newspaper group that includes the Denver Post, also owns the Daily Freeman and a number of other newspapers, in fact, more than 200, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think it's the second largest company in the country.
And so the difficulty is that the staff is shrinking so much, the newspaper is being decimated in Denver, and now they've even had journalists from all over the country protesting outside the Midtown Manhattan headquarters of Alden Capital.
Yes, although the numbers are not quite as dramatic as that. It turns out that there were about a dozen or so journalists showed up, a handful of them from Denver, which of course is, they showed up in New York, so it's a long ride to get to New York. Four or five of them were from my old newspaper, one of whom was quoted in the New York Times. This whole story has reached a very interesting phase. We've talked about hedge funds and vulture capitalists and squeezing the profit and all of that. Well, now we're at the stage where the reporters and the editors apparently have looked at each other and said, it can't get any worse than this if we go out and protest and try to raise attention to what's going on and hope that either the parent company will be embarrassed or that some people with deep pockets will come in and try to buy the publications individually or collectively. I don't know if any of that is just pipe dreams. I know that we had a mantra as business people, as publishers, when we were running our newspapers, which was we only do things that make good business sense. And I suspect that Alden Capital has reached that conclusion, although that what they might consider to be good business sense is an anathema to those of us who want quality journalism.
Just for clarification, Alden Capital is
the hedge fund, yes.
So in addition to Ira's former paper, Alden Capital or Digital First Media operates also the Record in Troy, the Saratogian in Saratoga Springs in Massachusetts, the Lowell Sun, the Sentinel Enterprise of Fitchburg, and earlier this year they bought the Boston Herald.
And the publisher of all of those papers is the same guy.
Aha. Interesting.
And there was something else that just slipped my mind, but it was brilliant.
No.
It was that the aforementioned Berkshire Eagle was also a member of that group. And the Alden mm-hmm. Capital Group sold the Berkshire Eagle to private ownership. And that carrot is out there for these people who are protesting. They're hoping that Alden will sell individually or collectively their newspapers.
That would be great. To Alan's earlier point about newspapers going broke, one of the great media analysts, Ken Doctor, who works for the Nieman Journalism Lab based at Harvard, did estimations. And you can only do this because it's privately held, so you don't have public reporting. But he believes that the company ran a profit margin of about 17% over the last year. Yeah, I think a lot of companies would be happy with
17%
margin.
It used to be, when I was the publisher in newspaper heyday, it was considerably more than that.
Yes.
So 17% is still pretty good, but it's way less than it used to be.
How much more?
Considerably more.
Considerably more.
Yeah.
They used to make a lot of money in newspapers. Those were the days.
So the Denver Post might find solace in someone like Jeff Bezos, right, who rescued the Washington Post, has reinvigorated it and has a commitment to that organization. If someone, there has to be someone, maybe not as wealthy or as filled with resources as Bezos, but there are other humans out there and other corporations who maybe have an allegiance
well,
to journalists.
Even Warren Buffett is now bemoaning the fact that he didn't think that what is happening to newspapers now would happen nearly as fast. And he, of course, owns the Buffalo News.
The danger, of course, is the white knight rides in and takes over a newspaper. And sometimes those white knights are corrupt of themselves. In other words, now you have made somebody the head of the newspaper. He could be a liberal, he could be a conservative for their own purposes.
So far, we haven't seen that with Bezos, right? So that's
right.
And meanwhile, in Los Angeles, where a private party has announced his intention to purchase the Los Angeles Times, among other papers out there, to glowing reviews and big stories. And now I just read yesterday as we speak that he has not yet settled the deal and that there's a question of whether he's pulling out.
He's a medical professional, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Very difficult. All right. We have run out of time. A wide-ranging conversation.
The show ought to be an hour.
Yeah. Talk to Rex about that.
Alan runs the place. What can we do? Okay. We're all to blame. Caitlin Brown and Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex with Mid-Times Union. Thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage
They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.